to stop momentarily. Good morning. Hey, good morning.
Oh, there he is. Good morning.
Yeah, a little trouble logging on, but a little technical difficulty. It resolved itself. How is everybody?
Okay, Jim's here too.
Hey, Jim, how are you? How you doing, Doug?
I'm well, Rabbi.
Doing okay.
Difficult week, I'm sure.
Yeah, not the most fun, I must say, but growth opportunities too, chances to look at stuff, so.
That's true. I was a friend of mine, his father passed away a couple of days ago, and I heard in the temple over the holiday, one person was saying, it's terrible, it's terrible. And the truth is, it's not an accurate response. And I guess it's difficult for some people because it's a very disturbing thing. They don't look at as death as really part of God's will. It's against their will, so they're responding with disrespect to the very the fact that it is part of God's plan. And it's important. They say that the rabbis teach that, and now somebody dies, so people respond by saying that God is a just God, meaning acceptance of justice, sort of like a reluctant type of response. But in the future, in the days of the Messiah, when God's knowledge is going to fill the earth, and everybody will see things clearly, people will not say that anymore, but they will say, blessed is God who's good and he does good. They will look at death as really as a good. So it's something to aspire to. Doesn't mean the person can't have that knowledge now. Doesn't mean the person can't have that response now either.
I appreciate it in some of the reading that I did that my understanding is that Judaism doesn't look at death as a bad thing. It's just part of the process.
Exactly.
Maybe a difficult part, but it's part.
It is difficult for the living. It certainly is not difficult for the dead. I mean, the person lives a good life, so the next world is really the eternal life. That's going to be amazing in terms of the experience and we use earthly terms like enjoyment or the benefit, the satisfaction that person is going to derive there. That's what the rabbis say, that in the next world, so the righteous will be sitting with their crowns on the head, benefiting from God's existence. So crowns on the head means that which crowned their heads, their knowledge. So because of their involvement in wisdom, so that is something which is going to pave the way to a very perfect existence in the next world. Okay. All right, should we start? Is Cal here?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Okay, good. Hello, Rivka, Daryl? No, not there yet. Okay. Well, I guess we'll start. It's already almost 11:25. So we're now up to a new part. And Kohelis, and this is what Ibn Ezra is pointing to all along, that this verse now introduces something new. It's the end of the sentiment of man, where he had all these assessments just based on looking at the physical life, and the earthly life, and he made all his judgments on that alone. And one of the sentences was is that, you know, the wise people don't necessarily always get the bread. I was trying to find that verse earlier. I thought it was relatively recent. Yeah, was it just last week we said that? Let me see. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking too far back, which is, you know, sometimes it's the previous verse, and you just don't look there. You look a little bit further back, because you think it was a little bit further back in time. So, it's 9:11, where he says, "Not to the light on foot is the race won, not to the strong is the war, and also not to the wise man is bread given," meaning you could have wisdom. That doesn't necessarily mean that you know how to manipulate all circumstances. Certain things that could arise that you didn't foresee, you know. So, despite that, King Solomon now says, and now we're moving on to a new verse, which is 9:13. So he says, despite that, he says, "Also this I have seen, wisdom under the sun, and it is great to me. It is a great thing in my estimation," King Solomon says. All right, so interesting. You know, we could take apart the verse. We'll see what, how we structured this verse. And he elaborates on what he means. In 14, he says, "There's a small city, and there's a few men in it. And there comes a great king, and he surrounds the city. He builds great ramparts or sieges the city, you know, with great fortitude." So, based on numbers, the city is really not going to have a chance, because it's a small city and few men compared to a great king, and he surrounds the city. So he isolates the city, and he's going to attack it. And then he goes on and he says, "And there is found in this small city a man who is poor, but he's wise. And he saves the city with his wisdom. And no man remembers this poor, wise man." And King Solomon says, and "I say, better off is wisdom from strength. And the wisdom of this poor man is despised, and his words are not listened to. The words of the wise with ease are heard." And he says, as compared from the shouts of a ruler to the fools, to the warriors, the foolish warriors. So he's comparing wisdom, that it's spoken with ease. The words of wisdom are with ease. You don't have to shout them. You just speak the words of wisdom very lightly, and they're heard. As opposed to the shouts, the cries of a ruler to the fools that he's ruling over. So we have to understand what the king's message is here. Again, he's saying that despite the fact that we said previously in 9/11 that you could be a very good runner, but it doesn't mean you win the race. You could be strong, but it doesn't mean you're going to have the war. And you could be a wise man, doesn't mean you're going to have bread. You could be poor and wise. Now, despite that, and this again was one of the questions that the people have in living the righteous life. Well, what does it do for me here? After all is said and done, the wicked people are living great, and then the righteous people are having tough times. Not all the time, of course, but one time is enough for a person to have a question. So now King Solomon wants to say, according to the commentaries, that despite that, still you have to give credit where credit is due. And now he's talking about how wisdom, it does have a certain benefit. But look what he says. The question was never about wisdom in the next world. What does the verse 13 say? That he, where is he praising wisdom?
Under the sun, which would be in this world.
Exactly. So that was the only place that there was the question. So you see that that's the only place that he has to address it. Since there was never a question about wisdom integrally, that that is what's going to give a person the next life. That was never questioned. So it's not answered. But it says that even in this life, though, you will find cases where wisdom is going to be supreme. So you can't say that there's an absolute in terms of wisdom having no benefit. So evidently he finds it necessary to respond to the people that have that type of concern. Yes.
Do we know for certain that 13 is referring to what is explained in 14, 15, and beyond? Or could 13 be an ending comment of the text that came before it?
It seems to me that it's a beginning of, like Ibn Ezra said, up to 13 was the words of common people, how they spoke to themselves in their hearts, their wrong sentiments, their wrong evaluations. 13 starts an actual incredible statement that King Solomon is saying himself. God is over easy. This I have seen. It is great to me. I mean, it's a real value statement by the king himself. And we just seen from the verses that he keeps on going on this theme of wisdom. And he shows examples of how it is something which has benefits in this world. Ibn Ezra says he quotes people that say that it's talking really about this whole thing about the king and the poor man and the city. It's a metaphor for the human being. That the city is really the person, the great king is the instincts, and the poor wise man is the intelligence. But he says he really feels that this is just talking straight. I mean, he's literal. This has to be taken literal. King Solomon is trying to express how wisdom does have it does play a role. But I don't think it's just playing a role. I think that he's showing that, I mean, we talked about this a few times, that the world does operate by systems. And when you work within the system, so then the world will work with you. If you try to breathe underwater, if you try to build a house with soft substances as opposed to nails and wood, right? All these different types of approaches which violate how the world operates ends in failure, ends in disaster. So it's clear that there is an approach to wisdom. And we shouldn't look at the fact that sometimes you have failure, because it's not the practical that's really important. It's the rule that, you know, you're living within a certain system and you're operating a certain way, which I think is what the underlying message he's going to be bringing out over here. See, people are really attached to the practical. They want to see, if you tell me that something's a good, it has to be good in 100% of the cases. If not, that's enough of an excuse to run away from a life of Torah. But the fact is that there are many circumstances that arise that are out of our control, that we don't foresee. And he said that earlier. He said, yeah, he said in 8:7, the person doesn't know when something is going to happen, and nobody is going to tell him. Meaning, you could have wisdom, but you can't foresee certain events, so that makes it difficult. He says in 5. He says in 8:5. A person who keeps a mitzvah, he will not see anything evil. think we said it there. Right, and that was, I guess, one of the concerns that people had. You don't know when something's going to occur. But that does not detract from the value of wisdom. I believe that's what he's illustrating over here when he says in 9... Which verse is that? 9:17. What does it mean that the words of wisdom, when spoken pleasantly, they're heard, as opposed to the shouts of a ruler to the fools that have less of an effect? Because, as one of the commentaries said, this was Rashi Asfono, that you can cry out if you're a leader and you're trying to organize a battle, but you don't have any type of a plan, it's not going to help all the cries that you give to your foolish warriors. As opposed to something which is sensible, there, no type of coercion, nothing extraneous to the idea itself is necessary. That's what I believe he means when he says the words of the wise, when it's just spoken very calmly, they are heard. Because it's the idea itself which is true. And that's also something which is heard. That means it penetrates the person. Something which is reasonable, that grabs on the person more than anything else. Because you can't deny truth. Emotions, they fluctuate. But truth is constant. Okay, but what he's saying, you see, that's where so verse, go back to the beginning of 9:13. Also this I have seen. Meaning, I've elucidated the problems, but now he's trying to tell you also this. In contrast, this is also a truth. It may be that you'll see a wise person who doesn't have food. That doesn't mean that the wisdom is lacking. And on top of that, you'll also see that there is a proof that wisdom, when all things be equal, is going to be successful. And that's why it's a great thing to him, and he gives the illustration how the practical, if it's not guided by wisdom, could fail. And that's what he means in the case of a king that's surrounding a small city. He's trying to show you that what is supreme in this case.
Rabbi, is he not also showing that that the injustice that they're concerned about that comes to the wise is partially due to the humans who are holding the position in the first place?
It could be. I don't believe, though, he's talking here about any injustice when he says that there's a poor wise man. He doesn't seem to...
In 15, he says that the wise man isn't remembered by anyone, so it seems that he stays poor and forgotten not because of heavenly justice, but because we're unjust here.
I think there's a different reason why he's mentioning that. I'll explain. See, what he's saying is that, first of all, you could have a poor wise man, and we have to understand why he has to bring in the fact that he's poor. Why can't he? He's just illustrating an example, so why don't you just tell me it's a wise man? If he wants to show that wisdom can conquer strength, and that's his point, why does he have to create the scenario where this wise man is also poor? That should strike you as a question. All right? And I will answer your question about that he's not remembered. Why does he have to bring that in? Not only that, but he says at the end of 16 that it's despised. His words aren't listened to. So what is his message? Evidently, there's more than one message here. But initially, to follow his order, he's trying to show that this also I've seen. I mean, despite the fact that there are questions... And why is it that if wisdom is so great that you see people that are wise and they're righteous but they're poor? Why? He says that is a truth. That is a truth. And he did talk throughout. And again, mentioning that many things are out of a person's control. So many variables are outside of your control. You can't even foresee what's going to happen. There's so much free will being expressed and so many people that you're in contact with and so many other situations and variables that there's no way to plan out exactly how your day's going to go.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I might have missed Jim's question, so I hope I'm not repeating it, but in 16, it says, the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heard. In 17, it says, the words of the wise are heard. So that seems like a contradiction.
17, yeah, right. Okay, we'll get to that. Right.
Okay.
Good observation. That was not what he was touching on.
Okay, thanks.
What is the call-in? Let me just see here for a second. I just got to give somebody the call-in number because it seems like there's a problem with the sound right now. Maybe the problem I had before I really didn't resolve. One second. Okay. Now, so he shows that the wisdom of this poor man is something which succeeds over the king. It doesn't express how, because it's not necessary to explain how he did it, what strategy he used. But since the world does operate, it could have been like King David when he was about to confront an enemy that was about to kill him, so he made believe he was a fool, and they dribbled saliva down his beard. And they looked at him and said, this couldn't be David. So he used intelligence, because he knew that psychology would demand that they would have a certain image of King David, and they wouldn't think somebody like this, they wouldn't think he would stoop to that level. But he knew how to use wisdom to save himself. And it could be many ways. It could be how to harness certain materials in the world, how to use psychology, whatever the need is, whatever the tools or the variables that he would manipulate in order to create a successful outcome. So it's not necessary to know here what exactly this poor wise man did, but he shows that this is something which is supreme. If you're following intelligence, that's how the world operates. That's his first principle. And he also mentions that the person is poor. And that nobody remembers this man, this poor man. Now you notice, at the end, he says nobody remembers this poor man. What is missing from that description of that person?
His wisdom.
Good. Now tell me why it's not mentioned there.
I don't know.
Did you say his wisdom is missing?
Because it doesn't call him, at first he calls him a poor wise man at the beginning of the verse, but then he just calls him a poor man at the end. It's talking about isolate that last part. But this man does not remember it. But no man remembers this poor man. No man remembers this poor man.
It is the idea that in the first half of the verse, it's stating reality. Okay, independent of what anybody thinks, the guy is poor and he's wise. But in the end, when it says no man remembered that poor man, it's looking at how man perceives him and people perceive him as a poor guy.
Okay.
They don't perceive him as a wise poor guy.
Okay, why is that?
Because people look at outward appearances and don't measure people generally on the basis of their wisdom.
Right. meaning the social arena, is something which is dominant in a person's assessment. Just like the practical world is what the person cares about, and he's not looking at the next world. So he mentions the person's poor to let you know that he is overlooked socially. And the cause of why he's not remembered is only because of his state of poverty. Nobody likes to associate with him. So, and also, I mean, maybe also he's telling you that there's no type of a social benefit that we're discussing here. We're discussing purely the fact that he saved the city. And this is the good of wisdom, despite the fact that in the social status, he's at the bottom of the totem pole. Okay? The only value he's trying to focus in on here is he's trying to show you how wisdom is supreme to might. Right? The pen is mightier than the sword. Slightly different idea, but intelligence is supreme. Okay, and that's why he leaves out the fact that he's wise when he's forgotten. He's forgotten not because of wisdom, he's forgotten because that status is not something which people identify with, that they want to associate with. Again, he's telling us this, so we shouldn't walk away with the feeling that wisdom is absolutely useless in this world. It can't be. This world runs by wisdom. There's just many variables. So that has to be understood as well. So the fool will look for an excuse to get out of the life of wisdom. So he sees at least one case on earth where the wise person is just not making it, so he discounts that life. Now, perhaps, if there was no practical benefit to wisdom at all, then he would be justified. So that's why the king brings us in. Because you can't have a praise of wisdom and talk about it in the life of earth that we all live and never see a benefit to it. That can't be. So that's another integral reason for mentioning this here now. Do you see that point? Yeah, if there was no, if all we had in Kohelis was just like all the other cases where nothing is good, everybody dies, and this happens to this person, that happens to that person, and you also have the statements about how the wise are suffering, if that's all you had, then you might have a good argument not to follow the life of wisdom. I mean, if there was never a case where wisdom had some practical benefit on earth, a person might be justified and say, well, why should I even go down the path of wisdom? Nobody who's wise is really, everybody wise is poor. If that was the case, that would be a good argument, wouldn't it be? If a person if a person couldn't see any benefit to wisdom, that every single wise person was suffering, and wisdom never worked out a solution for anybody on earth, ever, so how could a person ever say, well, despite all that, you know, it's good? You can't do that. So it must be that it's necessary that he isolates a case, at least one case, where he shows that wisdom does have that ability. Because if that's omitted from this book, then, like I said, people can have a justification. So he has to bring it in. Maybe that's I'm just thinking that's maybe a very primary reason why he brings this in at this point. You can't just leave give wisdom a bum rap. That has to be where he vocalizes, and he shows an example. So now he's defended wisdom. He shows that really it does work. The only thing is, you can't have it work in all cases because there's too many variables. But it has to be defended, and that's what he's doing here. But he also wants to show how the good of wisdom itself is not for any social benefit. That's why he says, the poor man is not remembered. There's no benefit to him. He doesn't get any fame for saving the city. That should not be what a person looks at. The fact is that he's trying to isolate that the wisdom itself can conquer, you know, a great enemy. All right. And that's what he says in 16. And I said that wisdom is better than the might. Right, he isolates it. So the person is not remembered, but that doesn't matter. The social does not come into play. And I said, wisdom is better than might. That's what he's trying to show you. But the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heard. So this must mean on other occasions. And you see also it says in 15, the first word says, and they found in the city this wise poor man. Found means that he had no real prominence up to the, until the people were desperate to look for a solution, to come up with a plan to save their city from this, you know, this mighty king that just laid siege on them. So they found him. Founding implies to me that he wasn't really prominent. And as soon as he saved them, that's it. It goes back to how it was. But it could be that we're saying in 16, and we'll take a look in the commentaries in a second, it could be we're saying is that it's true they listened to him, they got a plan, and he saved the city. But in general, this person is a wise person. And nobody likes to hear that they're living their life incorrectly. So that's why his words are not, they're despised and they're not listened to. Okay, now let's take a look at the commentaries on that.
Rabbi, is it important that in 15, it doesn't say that the people listened to his wisdom and followed him and thereby saved the city? It says he extricated the city through his wisdom.
Right.
So is it possible then that that is not inconsistent with 16? Because 15 isn't really saying they acknowledged his wisdom.
Could be. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I mean, he just did it, you know, covertly. He knew how to save them. He did it.
Yeah, isn't there somewhere in the Tanakh or the Talmud a case given when a poor man actually did that? And they give the specifics of how he did it, I thought.
I don't know of it. I have plenty yet to learn, so.
Could it be dreaming?
It could very well be there. It just is not something which I learned. I mean, you see that Jacob used this strategy against Esav, right? Esav was chasing after him with 400 men, and he came up with a plan, and using psychology and humility and gifts and the bribe, so he saved himself and his family. So you see there how wisdom, that's a perfect, analogy to this. There were numerous people, and there was a mighty king. You know, Esav was the king. And he had 400 men with them against Jacob and his, few dozen people that were with him. The thing that's bothering me now is why he has to repeat this in 16. He just told you the example of how wisdom surpasses might, and he isolated the fact that it's purely the salvation of the city which is important, and nobody remembered that poor man because again of his poverty. So what is he adding in 16? And I said, better is wisdom than might. And the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heard.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Rabbi, sorry to interrupt. Doesn't it say someplace in the... excuse me, don't have that cough. Doesn't it say someplace, either in Mishnah or Pirkei Avot, that if a man is strong and he can conquer a city, he has might, but if he has knowledge, he has wealth. In other words, the wealth is really measured by the knowledge of the person who is a rich man has knowledge, not only monetary wealth.
Well, that's two things. Pirkei Avos.
Yeah, two different things. Yeah.
Pirkei Avos is saying that a person who is strong, who is a person who is strong, is somebody who conquers his instincts. And he's strong, he's considered stronger than a person who conquers a city.
Right, okay. So that's as far as strength is concerned, but also a person who is wealthy, doesn't it say so? Because I remember reading it, but I don't have the right text in my mind.
Yeah, that means a person who's satisfied. A person who's satisfied with his possession is considered the wealthy person.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Rabbi?
Yeah, Doug.
Al just brought up a point that in 16 says the wisdom of the poor man is despised. Now, in 15, it just says nobody remembered him. But 16 is a stronger statement.
Yes.
It's one thing to say, okay, they pay no attention to him, but despise the wisdom, that seems like an additional level.
That's a good point. Yes, Sforno. Let's take a look at Sforno on 16. Actually, this Miskain Bazir is misnumbered. He says as follows. Even though that's possible that wisdom can overpower occurrences and natural events, right, well, might as well. One second. A little difficult read. One second. It seems to be he's saying a very odd thing. I don't understand it. I think I could translate it. He says as follows. Even though that it's possible that wisdom should overpower natural causes, events that come up, like in this case, where the person was able to manipulate circumstances to the success, use the wisdom, he says it's better that... that wisdom should prevent itself from doing this. I mean, it's better off that this guy didn't save the city, because if the wisdom was found in the poor man, and he is going to be despised, and wisdom will be despised because of his poverty. Interesting read by the Sforno. Even though that it is true, that it's possible, that wisdom is supreme and it will could manipulate circumstances and events and natural laws in order to be successful, it's better, it's more proper Shatimna hachachma lasoskein, that the wisdom should prevent itself from doing this, success. Because it is found in a man that's poor, and wisdom will be despised because of the poverty of this man.
Rabbi, I don't know if this helps, but my translation of Sephorno has that phrase as, it may happen that the wisdom will be prevented from accomplishing that benefit because the wisdom of a poor man is despised because of his poverty.
Oh, that's better. Good. Yukra. So I was reading the word yukra wrong. Yukra could mean it's yakar, more pleasant, but yukra can mean happenstance. Very good. That's accurate.
Interestingly, the first part of this translation of that little section says, and although it is possible that the wisdom will supersede the event and the signs of the zodiac, it may happen that the wisdom will be prevented from, and so forth.
Yeah, you got to leave that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says here, mazel. Mazel just means, it means nature. Literally, mazel, I believe, means zodiac or star, but that just means the position of the stars. And they did think back then that there were certain influences that the heavenly bodies had on Earth. They did have that belief. But like Radak says, when he was talking about the Balas Ov, you know, the case by Samuel and Saul, where Saul was desperate and Samuel died, and he wanted to know if he'd battle, I think the Philistines would be successful and so on. So it says that he found this witch, and she brought up Samuel from the dead and this and that. So the verses say it literally that he was talking to Samuel and he heard and this and that. So Radak says that it may be that you find even some rabbis that might believe that this happened, but when something goes against reason, you don't listen to them. It's such an important Radak. It's such an important point. And he actually goes on to explain a beautiful thing there. He says that there were three parties in that event. There was the witch, who made believe she was raising up Samuel from the dead. There was Saul. And then there were the two men that were with him. So he said, the witch that was, you know, quote unquote, raising up Saul, said that, see, she recognized Saul, and she knew why he was there, and she knew his personality, and that he was insecure, and he would want to contact, you know, the dead Samuel. So she made believe, and she was describing Samuel, because evidently this witch was familiar with Samuel. He was a very famous figure back then. So she knew what he looked like, and all she says, I see this man, and he's dressed like this, and he looks like that. So Saul said, oh, that must be. But Saul didn't see Samuel. The witch saw. Radak says the witch saw Samuel but didn't hear anything he said. Saul heard Samuel talking, but he didn't see him. And the two men that were with King Saul neither heard nor saw anything. So what's Radak telling you? That Saul, who was so desperate, he had some sort of a delusion. He thought he heard Samuel giving him a response. But he didn't see anything because his whole psychological need was the information, just the verbal communication. That's why the need of the person psychologically will produce, like a person's thirsty in the desert, he'll see water. But there's no audible, there's nothing audible about that mirage. Or if a person's very, very lonely, he might think he sees somebody in the distance. So the witch was cunning, and she couldn't communicate. She didn't know what was going on in Saul's mind specifically, so she could only say, you know, to save herself, yeah, I see this guy, I'm bringing him up, I actually am bringing up the dead. So then you have this with seances too, that the person who's running seance, they close their eyes, they touch their hands, and the one who's running the seance says, I see a person, he's this and that. So she gets some information that, without informing these family members. And everybody thinks, oh yeah, that's grandpa, that's who she's seeing. So she just gives enough. And there was a guy in TV once that was doing this, thank God he's not on anymore, and this guy Edwards, John Edwards I think was his name, and he would, Crossing Over was the name of this program. And it was on for a long time. And you see the people who come to the audience, they're desperately in need of wanting to talk to their dead relatives. So he'll just say, I see somebody, his name starts with S or P, and somebody in the audience will jump up, yeah, P, Peter, that must be. And he says very general statements, enough for the people to latch onto. So, you know, completely misleading the people and stealing their money and, you know, deluding himself and others in the process. But the point I'm just bringing about the Radak is that it has to make sense. That's really what... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and you said his point was that if what you see doesn't match your reasoning, or what you hear doesn't match your reasoning, then you have to go with your reasoning?
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah, Maimonides says it also. He says that the person should only accept as true that which he perceives with his senses, that which his mind tells him through reasoning is true, or that which is transmitted through the Torah, which was already authenticated as true. Now, why did I bring that up? Because we're reading the Sforno, and he says that sometimes it's right, like you said, sometimes it's prevented, wisdom is prevented from doing this because people despise the person. Okay. But was there another reason I brought up the Radak? So, okay, so let's do the Radak. This is probably, the Sforno. So he's saying that, and the Cal says that it's now talking about an additional facet that the wisdom is despised. So what is he adding? What is King Solomon adding over here? He said that I say that better is wisdom than might. But he wants to include the same verse that the wisdom of the poor person is despised and his words are not heard.
Are we getting perhaps to the case where if a rich guy had stood up and said the same thing that the poor guy said, the people would have heard it?
Yeah.
But they're not hearing it because of the guy's social status.
Exactly. People are so concerned with what people are going to say about me that I'm socializing right now with this poor guy. It's all about ego. The person is constantly looking to keep himself in his mind in a certain light that he thinks will be most pristine and how he thinks other people will view him. So he's living for a fantasy of the mind. And maybe that's what he's saying. He's contrasting that in 16 where he says, I say that better off is wisdom than might. Even though might is something which everybody wants, power. And he says, despite the fact that the poor man is going to be despised and his words are not going to be heard. Meaning you could put the word like while in there. I say that better off is wisdom than might, while the wise man is going to be despised and his words won't be heard. That doesn't matter. That is not the barometer that he's using here. And I think that this follows through why he says afterwards that he shows integrally how wisdom is supreme. Because you see that if you just isolate the wisdom from the poor person, and now he just says, the words of the wise, when spoken pleasantly, are heard. Now he doesn't have a wise, the person's not poor anymore. There's no poor person here. Just the words of the wise man, that's heard. So you see, if you strip away the poverty, that's something which people do hear. So he shows you from the other side that when it's coming from poverty, that's why a person's got a problem with it, because they despise the person. But if you remove that, so they'll be heard.
Oh.
Right, that's 17.
That's really nice, Rabbi. Thank you.
Yeah.
And you see how that answers, you know, Jim's question earlier, where it said at the end of 15, why does it say that the man is not remembered? Because it's just only talking about the because of the poverty. It leaves out this title of being a wise man. He's not remembered because he's a miskin. He's a poor person.
Thank you.
Sure. But it's interesting. Even while he's talking about how great wisdom is, meaning the whole reason he brought up, you know, this series of verses is to show the flip side. That's why he says, also I have seen that even though we said that sometimes, you know, you'll see times people are wise or righteous, but they have a tough life. He says, you see times where wisdom does work. But it's interesting how he still includes over here that this wise person is poor. You see, at the same time as he's showing the benefit of wisdom, how it could save a city, it doesn't mean it's not accompanied by the fact that this wise person himself is poor. So he did a great good, and wisdom is now shown to be superior to might, because the person is wise, understands how to manipulate, and sometimes it'll work out if everything is in line. But nonetheless, he himself could be a poor person. And you know, there's a statement by the rabbis. They said that from the poor people comes forth wisdom. Why do you think they say that?
Rabbi?
Yes.
May I say?
Sure.
I'm just wondering if they're referring to the, thank you. I just wonder if they're referring to the fact that a person who has a lot of material wealth really doesn't spend the time on being wise. He's too interested on making money. Whereas a poor person has the time and the interest, and also is looking to Hashem for help in so many different ways. And learning is a way of feeling closer to Hashem.
Well, I would say that you got to reverse it. That it's not because the person's poor that they look to God.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're looking to God and they're involved in studying so much. That's why they're poor. They did not make the decision in life to invest time in becoming wealthy. They made a decision to put the majority of their energies into study. And because of that, it doesn't allow them the involvement in things in pursuit of business, transactions and all. But that's a decision that they made. That's a decision they made because they do value that which is eternal, and they want to see truth. They want to be involved in reality, as opposed to living their whole lives and, you know, working 9 to 5 for the whole lives. And then they get to the end, they've got a lot of money, but they didn't spend their life, you know, majority of it in pursuing wisdom. So they made a decision that, you know, that at a certain point, that wisdom is what they wanted. They wanted to really grasp onto what the whole objective of their, you know, their existence is. Wisdom. That's why we have intelligence, no other being has it. So you see, it's the inverse of what you're saying.
I see.
Do you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Poverty is...
yes.
Right. It's not that poverty produces wisdom. It's that wisdom, the investment in wisdom is so intense, and that's the majority, that removes them from pursuing... I mean, they still work. An intelligent person knows, you know, if he has no bread, he can't learn. So he works, but he's living in a way like Maimonides talks about, where he abandons the yoke of the calculations that the rest of the world follows. And he sort of removes himself from that. He lets go of that a bit. He has more of a trust in God, and he spends his time studying and teaching, and that's really what he wants. Like the priests, that's what he says over there. It's the law. We've mentioned that once. The end of Maimonides in Shmita and Yovel, where he says it's not only the tribe of Levi alone that will be sustained by God, but any person who enters the world. Any person, doesn't say Jew, any person, because perfection is something which is open to every human being. And a person who wants to live that way, and he wants to live as God created him, so then God will provide him with something which is not, you know, what will sustain him. Because the truth is, he's not looking for wealth. So he doesn't give him wealth. That would be a distraction. God gives him whatever his needs are. He maintains him in a state of life where he can continue on that path. Because that's really what the objective is.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I was wondering if back in 15, it says, my translation says a poor wise man instead of saying a wise poor man. And I wondered if that fits into what you had just said. Because he is a wise man who is poor versus a wise poor man. Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying, but here it has poverty first, doesn't it? He's poor first.
Right.
So it's the opposite of what you want to say, no? You're trying to say that...
I'm wondering because...
Are you trying to say that the wisdom caused the poverty, and that's what the verse is saying?
Well, what you were just saying was that because he's involved more in study and he's not interested in the material things, he's therefore poor. And so I was thinking that because wise is closest to man here in the translation, that he is a wise man. And that the poor is further away from the man in the sense that it's not as important to him as the wisdom.
Well, in the Hebrew, it says a man who is poor and wise.
Okay. That's why I was wondering if there was if my translation was...
Yeah. But I think the reason why it puts the man who is poor, meaning when it talks about a man who is poor, it's trying to give you the title of the image. Ish. The Hebrew word ish means like a person could be an ish milchama, a man of war, or an ish gibor, a mighty man, or it could be an ish miskan, a man who is poor, meaning that the man is the image, how people look at him. And that's what I think King Solomon is trying to emphasize here, is that this man is a poor man. That's the first thing people see about him. That's why he's despised. He's also a wise man, but that's not how the people relate to him. He's a poor man. If they would say he's a wise man that's poor, they'd be more in track to reality. But people are in the social sphere more than they are in the absolute sphere of truth. So that's why he's referring to it that way. He's a poor man. That's his real definition. He's poor. It doesn't matter that he's wise. That's what they care about more. So that's why he puts it that way. Okay, so we'll wrap up here unless there's any other questions or comments.
Good for the moment.
Okay.
Good.
All right then. All right, so we'll pick up. And I actually sent out, did everybody get the article? Because I had cited that issue about the writing on the tablet, so I sent out the article last week. Did you all get it?
Yes,
thank you.
Okay. If you have any questions, I think it's just an amazing thing that Maimonides wrote there. So I hope that elaborates it well. It was one of the most interesting ideas that came across this whole year. All right, so if you have any questions on that, let me know. But otherwise, we will pick up next week, same time.
Okay, great.
All right, everybody, thanks so much. Have a great week.
Okay, everybody, have a great week.
Everything.